Hello, and welcome back to Books, Cats, and Chaos, the podcast where we explore epic tales, sprinkle in, actually don't even sprinkle in anymore, it's just humor, and we embrace the chaos of book loving, cat herding, coffee drinking, and all the good stuff. My name is James.
And I'm Casey, and we are a husband and wife team who love all things that he just listed.
If you are new here, we just want to let you know that as of right now, our schedule is still on Tuesdays, we're doing Throne of Glass, and Thursdays, we are doing the Empyrean series. Throne of Glass is going to take several months because there are a lot of books in that series, and we didn't want to wait to get through all of those before we started to talk about this, particularly because Onyx Storm just came out, and there's a lot of good stuff, and I just happened to pick up the book and thought, eh, let's see what happens. And then I read it, and I went, all right, well, I guess this is my life now. So I'm almost done with Iron Flame. So I said, yeah, there's no way we can wait until we're done with Throne of Glass. We have to get started on this one, too, because there's too much good stuff to talk about. So,
yep. Both are a very great series in their own right. So please make sure to have read Fourth Wing before continuing this podcast. It's better if you have read the full Fourth Wing book, but at the very least, you know, chapters 1 through 12, as today we are covering chapters 7 through 12. And as much as I am dying to deep dive the full series, Fourth Wing, Iron Flame, and Onyx Storm, all at once, I have to sit on my hands because we decided to do it one book at a time. There are still many of you who are new to Fourth Wing, so we don't want to spoil the later series for you. And mainly because James mentioned that he is still reading Iron Flame. So no spoilers for James and for many of you. And with that said, there might be spoilers for Fourth Wing as we go through Fourth Wing. We'll try to keep the rest of the book as spoiler-free as possible, but it's better to have read it in its entirety when joining us.
It is very difficult when, for me particularly at this point, as I'm reading through and I go, oh, that's what that, oh, some bitch, that's what that was. And you guys aren't going to get the context. And so it's very hard not to be like, dang it. That's what that meant, and that's what that meant, and we're going to do our best. But if you hear moments like that, maybe just take a minute and say, you know what? I'm going to notate this part so that I can come back to it later.
Yes.
But we will do our best to not actually outright say what the connection is, because
yep.
It's great when it unfolds for you in your brain. I mean, I've been bugging her about questions. I'm like, does this mean this and does that mean that? And she's like, read, you'll find out. And it's like, well, you know, and
I don't want to spoil anything for you. You have to go through on the same journey I went on.
And it's equal parts frustrating, but equal parts also just good, because when you start putting pieces together, you know, or particularly if you've read far enough in the series and then you come back, like what we're doing for this, and you reread parts of it and you go, oh.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's a lot of like light bulb moments that happen when you revisit this, which is why we say it's best if you read ahead as much as you can so that when you come back for this discussion, you'll hopefully also get some of those light bulb moments, because they're great, you know, they just, and sometimes infuriating.
Oh yeah. It's an emotional roller coaster. So do look out for a future episode where we will discuss the Iron Flame reveals with Fourth Wing. It'll probably be an episode in between our Fourth Wing coverage and our Iron Flame coverage. And then we may later do the same thing with Onyx Storm. Just a theories sort of episode, no recaps, just all the little things that we picked up throughout the books.
Also, we're going to try and make some time to talk about all the things that I thought and how many of them I got right.
And how many you got
And how
wrong?
many I got wrong. I would like to say I'm at least about 80-20 at this point. Most of the stuff I think I've actually gotten, if I haven't gotten it in its entirety, I've at least gotten the core of it right with a little bit of a left or a little bit of a right. Like I didn't quite put into my considerations or,
Yeah.
but so far I think I'm doing pretty good actually. I don't think I've really been off the mark too
No,
terribly bad.
you've been rock solid so far. Yeah, I'm actually surprised.
You know me, I analyze and I overanalyze, especially when I know that there are things, when I know that there are things that I'm missing. And it
Yeah.
is frustrating the crap out of me because I'm racking my brain trying to think of what clues I missed. And some of them, it's like, oh, that was the clue. But there's no way you would even know until you reread or got farther and then came back to it. Like,
Yeah.
some of it is in plain sight, but it's so well hidden because you don't have the knowledge yet.
Yeah.
So that's what makes it fun. That's why it's fun to talk about it. So
Rebecca Yarros is a mastermind genius with all of this.
yes.
So, with a content reminder, this podcast is for adult audiences only, as we will be using adult language, curse words, to discuss adult topics and themes and more. Fourth Wing, the Empyrean series, has violence and sex, and we will be discussing those topics.
Also has violent sex.
Now, don't spoil it.
Oh, I think people already knew that. If you haven't already, but you are liking what you hear so far, then please don't forget to rate, subscribe, or comment on this podcast or on our YouTube or any of our socials. We love to interact and put stuff up and hear from everybody. So, on that note, cadets, let's tackle the gauntlet.
Yay.
That's not, I don't think they're saying yay.
I think orally did,
Well,
but
okay.
all right, cadets. Chapter 7. It's nighttime as Bezgaeth, and Violet is collecting an arsenal of things, berries, roots, mushrooms, etc., to help her take out her opponents on the challenge mat. So far, her squad has not lost anyone. She climbs her favorite oak tree, searching for the purple berries that will give her her advantage. When she has collected what she needs, she starts to descend but realizes there's movement under her. It's Zayden and Imogen. Aw, shit. And they are soon joined by other cloaked, marked cadets. Turns out, marked ones have been meeting in the Rider's Quadrant for the past 2 years. Zayden is looking out for them, but expects them to help themselves as well, assigning those that need help with hand-to-hand to Garrick and Imogen. One of the first years loses it and asks if Zayden can get him out of the Rider's Quadrant. And Zayden tells him he's not going to make it and moves on. Harsh. Zayden is not one to mince words. Another first year brings up Battle Brief, and Zayden tells them, learn what the professors teach, keep what you know, but recite whatever they tell you to. Violet is shocked and appalled by this. Girl, just you wait. Marked ones ask when they get to take out Violet. Zayden tells them that Violet is his to handle when the time is right. He orders everyone to leave in groups of three. Violet counts to 500 before making her way off the tree and then is promptly hurled against Zayden's chest. Oh, baby. Turns out Zayden's signet is shadow wielding and he knew she was there. Oh, shit. After some dagger throwing on Vi's part, which left Zayden a little impressed, he tells her she should do her knife trick on Barlow the next time he's being an ass. And oh, my Dune. Zayden resheathes Vi's daggers on her. His gaze locks on her braid, and his breath hitches. Zayden tilts his head, studying her, as she tells him she won't tell anyone about his secret club. And ice prickles her scalp. Funny enough, he believes her, and tells her he owes her a favor of his choosing. He tells her to get back to the barracks before her wing leader finds out she's out past curfew, and she tells him he's her wing leader, but Zayden has already left the chat. All right, time for our thoughts, theories, and predictions. So, at the start of each chapter, we get these little excerpts or blurbs that I like to call them from different officers or, cadets, writers, and stuff. And for this chapter, we find out that there were two amendments made to Beskai Athwart College. Marked ones assembling in groups of three or more will now be considered an act of seditious conspiracy and is hereby a capital offense. We come to find out later that Melgren can't see the marked ones when they gather in groups of three or more. So he can't keep an eye on them. Which is why tonight's little gathering, would be a big no-no if leadership or anyone were to find out. Leadership is keeping an eye on the marked ones to see if the children will also turn rebel like their parents did. And we also later find out all the marked children end up in the writer's quadrant, which Melgren is the general of, and the marked ones don't get a choice of quadrants like the other conscripts do, which that's fucked up.
I wonder how long it took Melgren to figure out that he couldn't see the marked ones when they gathered.
His dragon is the one that executed all of their parents,
Yeah.
and all of their children ended up being marked
Right, by
because of
his
his
dragon,
dragon.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like his own thing works against him, which is a pretty big power flaw, honestly.
It does kind of seem like that. Hot take. I wish Violet would have questioned Zayden more. About the whole, not specifically to him, but questioned herself and her teachings. When she learned, or when she overheard Zayden tell everyone, "Learn what they teach you in battle brief, recite that, but keep what you know." Like, her training as a scribe was, to find answers, to research to find answers and stuff. Wouldn't you think her curiosity would have peaked at that point and be like, "What do they know? Why is Zayden telling them, keep what you know? What is different than what they know versus what our professors are teaching?" I think so far she's still early into the writer's quadrant, so she would be more of the scribe-like mind. And I think they've just pushed this out really fast.
It would have been for a girl who, literally questions everybody and is like, why are you doing this? And why are you forcing that and whatever? And for him to say something that's in direct conflict with, what they're taught, which is, the professors are the ones who are out on the front lines, and they see, or not necessarily the pro I, they get their information from the front lines, right? So they're supposed to be that next step onto the information that they get. And obviously, you would look at it and say, they're not going to tell us everything because some of it's going to be classified, But the way that Zayden says this makes it sound like the ones who are meeting here know a truth that nobody else knows, and that the professors do also know, but they're not telling anybody for reasons, but that they're also pushing an agenda that is different than the truth, right? It's like a half truth or a, just withholding information, or which we do actually see that later, considerably later, about the selective truths that they put forward, and especially when others know, and they're like, that's not, why aren't they talking about this? Or, we know that this is a thing and nobody's talking about it. Like, so this is, I think, a peek into that. Zayden already knows that the professors deal in half-truths and withholding information. And even information that's not even classified sometimes. It's just a matter of keeping the students unaware and in control. Which, I mean, to be fair, an uneducated populace is much easier to control than, those who are in the know, It's,
Great commentary on today's.
I mean, like from a military standpoint, I get it. They're the soldiers. They don't need all the information, and that can cause unrest where people disagree with, decisions that are being made. But it does seem weird that Violet wouldn't be looking into that and being questioning and like, what do you like, why would you say that? Because it's just it's an odd thing to say,
Yeah.
but she does it. She completely passes over it. Like,
Yeah, I think her bias against the marked ones at this point is still really heavy. You
well,
know, I
yeah.
mean, so that probably was affecting her thinking and everything. I just, for her who is always on this quest to learn and to learn the truth and stuff, I thought that was just really glanced over. I also noticed, I don't know if you picked up on this, but Zayden told the group Violet was his to handle, not take out, not kill, not destroy, handle. And the word sounds threatening, and I can see where people would take it to mean kill her, but I feel like he purposefully said handle here and not kill.
Well, when you consider that this is one of those things that you're going to tie in later.
Take notes. Make a tab.
But yes, because he knew that she was there in the tree, but nobody else did. So handle is the word that he chose because he is going to handle her. He's not going to kill her for reasons. Whether that's because he's being sadistic, he wants to torment her some more, or string it out and just have her break under pressure. I mean, who knows, right?
That's true.
I mean, we know, but you have to get farther in the book to know the
I mean that is a great psychological
Oh, I mean,
mind
yeah.
fuck.
And it does. It works on her because she's constantly like, is it now? Is it going to be now? Where is he? Why? Like,
Yeah,
drives
I
her
mean she
absolutely nuts.
it does drive her nuts, and she views Zayden more of a threat than Jack. And Jack is the one actively like, I'm gonna slit your throat, I'm gonna kill you, I'm gonna do this. And Zayden's just like, yeah, guys, I'll handle her when the time is right.
And when is that? But yeah, it's. Handle is like enough of a thing that you can say that people look at you and go, okay, like
He'll get the
he'll
job
get the
done.
job done, but it's not quite as you say kill, and then people are gonna come back later and be like, you said you were gonna kill her, and he'd be like, no, I said I was gonna handle her. And handle he does.
Oh my God. Okay, moving on. We will see and have already seen several times when Zayden seems to be studying Violet, she feels that prickly sensation at her scalp. And she doesn't get this feeling when Dane or Jack are studying her, only Zayden. What does it mean?
It means that he's around. I attribute it to his shadow powers.
Yeah.
Or I mean, at least that's, that was the working theory. Was because we know his shadow powers are also very strong, stronger than most of the other cadets, right? Like in terms of their own Cygnets, like his shadow powers are just really strong. So I always just figure that she just was, maybe because she was always just hyper aware of his presence because, a looming threat. And so the shadows would give that kind of like, oh, he must be here somewhere because there's something and,
Yeah. This will be one of the things that we'll discuss, we'll debate in that special Iron Flame Fourth Wing crossover episode. So I highly suggest reading Fourth Wing. Reading Iron Flame and then maybe rereading certain sections of Fourth Wing. I think some of the scenes take on a whole new meaning. But yeah,
definitely.
We'll debate that
They
later.
definitely, a lot of stuff in this book, it really makes you rework the way you view events in this book when you read through Iron Flame.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I imagine it's going to be that way when I eventually get to Onyx Storm. It's going to make me
Yes.
rethink things in Iron Flame
And Fourth Wing.
and forth. Yeah, see, so just mark every page and write a note to yourself to come back and relook at this. Cause
Read the series and then reread the series.
everything means something, and then it means something else later.
Yeah.
So, telling you, there's a lot to absorb. Chapter 8. Dane has been walking her to her morning duty shift every day, and Vi looks forward to it. He checks in on her, asks her if she's okay with the challenges later that afternoon. She tells him not to worry, she's been training with Rhi. What she doesn't tell Dane is that she's found the list of challenges that Brennan said would be posted, so Violet knows who she will be facing. Dane advises her to lay low with Jack Barlow and in classes, which is the complete opposite of what Zayden said, because Zayden said throw daggers at him. Maybe that'll make him, think twice about his, Vi briefly feels bad for not telling Dane about Zayden's secret club, but knows that holding the secret is the right thing to do. Zayden is looking out for the first years. They weren't planning anything nefarious. Violet checks in for breakfast duty. She has dried powdered fonally berries that she just happens to sprinkle on Oren Seyfert's eggs. Professor Carey's signet allows him to project what he sees in his mind, which makes his dragon class really cool. And this is where we get to learn some stuff about the dragons. Apparently, fewer dragons are willing to bond each year, despite the number of riders entering the quadrant. No one knows why, and the dragons won't tell. Dragons only talk to their bonded riders and only give their full names to their bonded riders, which this will be something to talk about in Onyx Storm eventually. So put a tab on it. Actually, this whole thing is going to be something to discuss later when we learn about the dragons and the Empyrean and their own politics, and because the dragons are not all in the same mindset either. They're just like the humans. And so it gets really, as you learn about the relationship of the riders and their generals and then the dragons and their uppers and the elders, and oh man, it just.
It's called the Empyrean series for a reason,
Yeah, so.
not the Rider series.
No blue dragons are willing to bond this year. However, there are several blue ones in active service. Of course, Sigale, Zayden's dragon. It is typically forbidden for dragons to bond relatives of their previous riders, which we will go into that later too. There is one massive black dragon, Tairn, besides General Melgrin's
Think Coda.
Coda. I haven't listened to the audio stuff, so. He's the oldest of his den. Black dragons are the rarest, smartest, most cunning, and most discerning. Reds are quicker to temper, and blues are ruthless and fierce. There are also greens and browns. And of course, Jack Barlow, he wants Tairn, because, I mean, why wouldn't you want the second biggest black dragon? As if he has a choice on who the dragon bonds with. And I feel like this is something that everyone forgets a lot.
Or at least the bullies do.
Like, yeah. A rider's signet is a result of a unique chemistry between the rider and the dragon, and it says more about the rider than the dragon. The stronger the bond, the more powerful the dragon, the stronger the signet. Naolin was Tairn's last rider, and he could siphon from other power sources, dragons, riders, etc., and use the power or redistribute it. He depleted himself trying to revive a fallen rider who just happened to be Brennan, Violet's older brother. Violet questions Kaori about why Naolin would try to revive Brennan if he was already dead, and Kaori doesn't give him a straight answer. He tells her that he taught both her siblings, and Vi is the smarter one and more compassionate. Not all strength is physical. Which is also something that Taryn also echoes to her later, too. Later that afternoon, Dane and Violet are standing near the challenge mats. I realize that that might have been a spoiler for some people, but I figure everybody knows that Violet and Taryn are the bonded pair, so... I realize we haven't gotten there yet. Sorry, guys, but you should at least know that much from the series, so... later that afternoon, Dane and Violet are standing near the challenge mats, watching Rhee go at it and kick an ass. Dane tells Vi he heard Orin and his friends talking about how they were going to take her out today on the mats since they consider her to be weak and a liability to the wing. But Violet happens to see that there is a greenish tinge to Orin. Vi congrats Rhee on her win. Jack taunts Vi, telling her it'd be a shame if someone else killed her before he did, because bro's got issues. Zayden's words come back to Violet, and she throws two daggers at Jack. One nearly nicks his ear, and the other lodged itself in the wall an inch below his balls. This is twice now that she's threatened his balls. And dude is just not, like, giving it up.
No.
Fear widens his eyes, and Violet waves at him. Dane is upset at Violet for not laying low. Kale. But Vi feels a prickle at her scalp and shifts her gaze to meet Zayden's. There's a hint of a smile on his lips as he leaves to observe fourth wing cadets on another mat. It's Violet's turn on the mat. Orin is now green and sluggish. She's watched his fighting style for the last couple of weeks and knows when he will charge. For a moment, he looks like he's going to be sick, but then he charges anyway. Vi knocks him down and he throws up everywhere. Professor Emeterio says he's done. He yields. For the next month, the hardest part of Violet's plan is the timing of the poisons. Fifth week, Vi is supposed to challenge Rayma, but Vi fed the poison too early, and she was taken to the healer's quadrant. But no problem, because Zayden is here to save the day, and he steps on the mat instead.
Don't know if he's going to save the day, but it'll be fun.
No, I mean, the fight was going to be canceled, and he said, no, it's okay. I'll take her on. And I legitimately think everybody thought that Violet was going to die right here.
Yeah. Like, that was the end of the book.
Like, I think everyone was just like, oh, Zayden, he's making his move right now? Okay. Yeah, it's done. It's over.
He's going to make a big spectacle out of it in front of everyone. Yep.
So, as we tend to do, as we look at the relationships of the characters, we're gonna see a lot of comparisons between Zayden and Dane. Because Dane is, you know, her best friend. And Zayden is her best shot at being killed. So, Dane is supposed to be looking out for her, right? He keeps telling her to lay low, but you can't just tell somebody, like, lay low, don't do anything, or whatever, and then, like, go off and do something else. Especially when, well... That might not be fair, actually, because he is still thinking of her as the scribe girl.
Yes.
And she is already exhibiting a very rebellious nature.
A violent nature.
To survive, right?
Yeah.
And so I think his mistake is he's like, you need to lay low, you need to chill. And he's thinking, this is Violet. She's going to be fine. She'll listen to me because that's how it used to be. And Violet is like, no.
It's, yeah, she's got to do what she's got to do in order to survive, in order to not look the weakest. And Dane is kind of telling her the opposite.
Yeah. So it's hard to be mad at him because he is sort of like, do this and then thinking that that's the end of it. And he's not taking into consideration that things have changed. And also as a squad leader, think he should be paying way more attention to what she's doing. Like,
I agree.
It's like, you need to be safe and you need to protect, da 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 da. But he's still leaving her alone,
Unprotected.
unprotected. And basically,
Untrained.
like, it's like, that's great. But if I lay low and that doesn't work, then what?
Yeah. Like she tells him, Rhi and Sawyer have stepped up and they're training her in the hand-to-hand for challenges, but you would think that as her best friend, as her squad leader, he'd be like, we need to do more. You need to do more. This is what you should be focusing on, not lay low in your classes, lay low from Jack. Like, that's just, you're not helping your friend and you're not helping your squad. You are a squad leader. You should be looking at who are your potential weakest and trying to strengthen them up. And he's not doing that. I mean, and we later learn what the second years go through in Iron Flame. So that could be
Yeah.
part of it. But at the same time, if he is such a good friend, why isn't he doing more?
Yeah, he's
Versus we have Zayden, who's a third year. He's a wing leader, so we know that he is busy. He is strapped for time, but he's making all the marked ones meet in secret and trying to find out what areas they're having problem with, and he's assigning them to, the senior cadets and saying, okay, work on it. These two people, they're the best fighters we have. You train with them. Battle brief, this is what you're going to do. This is what you're going to pay attention to. And it's such a different leadership dynamic.
Yeah. Well, and that does go to show. And again, we'll learn. This is one of those things when you reread, you kind of have a better understanding about why Zayden is so invested in this stuff, right? Like, he's a natural born leader. And it is really not that.
It's part of that, but there's more.
There's so much more about just his everything that he does and has been through, and I'm not gonna say much more about that, but he is a good leader versus Dane, who maybe is still kind of learning the ropes a bit. But yeah, he's not treating Violet like he would treat any other squad member, because I think he still just can't get past the idea that she is, that she shouldn't be here, which would mean even more, help her more.
Right?
Until you see her walk out that door to the scribes, you should be focused on protecting, training, keeping her safe. And I don't know, it's a little irritating the way he just has got kind of a half-assed, like, just lay low and they'll leave you alone. And it's like,
That's not gonna
that's not
work.
how that works, dude.
No. So, what are your thoughts on why so many of the dragons are unwilling to bond? What is happening? You had just finished Fourth Wing not too long ago. So, what were you thinking now versus, when you're almost at the end of Iron Flame?
I still don't have like a definitive reason for this. My thoughts kind of go halfway. Like, less of the dragons are less willing to bond because, as we do learn at some point, there's a fair amount of a discord within the dragon's own political society. We don't know what it's about. We don't know why one is choosing what, and because we're not privy to that information, because dragons don't share that information with humans. And so, because we're doing this from Violet's point of view, we're also not privy to that information. We just know that there is some sort of discord happening within the, I don't know what they call it, the Council of the Dragons, right? And so initially I thought it was just the dragons were getting kind of just like, eh, I don't see the point. Like, this is annoying. Humans are annoying.
I mean,
But now, as I'm reading more, in Iron Flame, and the thing is that even through Iron Flame, at least where I'm at, and I only have, I don't know, maybe 100, maybe less than 100 pages before I'm done, there's still no like definitive answer about why the dragons are bonding less and less. But I imagine it has something to do with their views on the humans and the wards and just the whole split between, I don't know. It's hard to, I don't know. I just know that
It'll be a
there's something that not everybody is agreeing with.
It will be a reoccurring question, I think, throughout the series until the end.
So even in Onyx Storm, we still don't really have an idea about what the deal is, or.
No, that's the only thing I'll tell you about that.
Yeah.
So we also learn that it's forbidden for dragons to bond relatives of one of their previous riders. We don't know, or at least it's not clear to me, who made this rule. Dragons are humans. We do know that dragons are above human rules and laws. So was this a human-made rule and the dragons have just agreed to it, or is this a dragon rule for a specific reason? We just don't know what yet. This is something to be also tagged for later.
Do we actually find out who made that rule?
I don't think so.
We just know it was a rule, and we know why that is the rule. But it kind of seems like the dragons don't actually really pay that much attention to it. Like
Dragons do what they
they
want.
kind of do, but at the end of the day, they're like, "Nah, I like you. I think I won't eat you or fire breath you today." And you're like, "All right, cool." Is there
Meh.
a family thing here? I don't care. It's not up to me.
So I have a question, and this has not been answered yet. I don't know in which book it may or may not be addressed, but do you think we're going to get an epic showdown between Taern and Coda? So Coda's currently the biggest, largest black dragon, and Taern is the second biggest black dragon. There's only two black dragons so far.
I don't know. I mean, it's obvious that they do not see eye to eye on things from their interactions. And particularly when you get up into Iron Flame, you see a little bit more of that too. That Taern has his opinions and Coda has his opinions, and they are strong opinions. We do know that Coda is bigger. And I think that would, if they did do it, that would be a that Taern would be in for a fight for his life, because there aren't a lot of other dragons willing to go up against him, Taern, but Taern's also not stupid. He's full of himself, and his abilities, but he's not stupid.
No, he's very smart and very cunning.
I don't
So,
know. I mean, that would be, I kind of hope not, because I feel like Taern wouldn't walk away from that very easily.
yeah.
So, but Milgren's also a dick, so.
Yeah. I want to know how absolutely no one else realized that every single one of Violet's opponents were getting sick in some sort of way before her challenges. Even Rhiannon, her friend, who is shown to be really observant with a lot of things, didn't really catch on.
This is actually probably one of the more little frustrating things in this part of the book, because,
Did this frustrate you?
well, it did, because she did this to, what, five of her opponents? I could see getting away with it once or twice, but by the third, fourth time, somebody should be looking at that and being, why is every opponent of Violet's getting sick?
I mean, I think one of the ones, like their whole squad ended up getting sick because they all ate off the same breakfast.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was still one of her opponents.
But there's a pattern.
Yeah.
And there's a very definitive pattern that I
Yes.
feel like anybody with half of an observational skill would look at that and be like,
What is going
that's
on?
two in a row. Okay. That's three in a row. That's four in a row.
Even if none of the other cadets really realized it, because they're all focusing on their own challenges, you think Professor Immaterio would have picked up on something since he has to watch them and take
Yeah.
notes in them.
I mean, maybe it's because none of them were fully incapacitated and they always showed up, except for the one girl who, had to go to the healer's quadrant early.
Yeah.
And, they all try to fight, but still, she's literally winning all her fights based off of her opponents being unable to. I mean, the one was basically like seeing colors and stuff. Like,
Yeah.
that on its own seems fairly odd. Or if nothing else, why is the professor not out there like, this cadet is clearly on mushrooms? Has anybody else come into contact with mushrooms? Did you guys go out and pick them? Where'd they come from? Who else has access to this? Because this is a very serious problem if you guys ate these on accident or if somebody ate this on purpose. And I feel like somebody somewhere should have got that.
No, I agree. I was just like, yeah, you got away with it a couple times, but 5 weeks in a row?
No. Two,
That's.
three at the max, but five is plot
Yeah.
armor. Yeah, it was annoying.
Sorry you felt that way. It's okay. I felt the same way too. All right, flying into chapter 9, Dane immediately tries to argue about Zayden challenging Violet on the mat, saying he's a little out of her league. And one has to wonder if Dane means this in more ways than one. Zayden discharges all of his weapons, but Vi keeps her daggers. She's not stupid. She immediately throws one at him, and he's able to catch it midair. What the fuck? Zayden knocks her to the mat, blocks her strikes and kicks. It's also the first time he introduces his nickname for her, Violence. He easily disarms her just because he can. And while doing all of this, he gives her quick, quiet advice, and she realizes the lesson is just for her, despite other cadets watching. Don't trust a single person who faces her on the mat. He expects her to learn from her mistakes. He also lets her know that taking people out before hitting the mat is smart, but she's not testing herself and she won't get better. Yes. Once he has her. You have a thought?
I'm just wondering now, based on what I just read, whether he caught on to her poisoning people because he's observant or because of the other things.
That's a question for our bonus episode that we will debate about.
Right? I mean,
Well, also think about he caught the dagger in midair.
well, I was going to say that too. Like,
Not his shadows, but
no,
he
it
did.
all makes a little bit more
More sense
sense
now?
now. Like,
Are you just having that light bulb moment?
yeah, no, it's like, oh, okay. And yeah, there's really just no way that she's going to get away from him because. Yeah, you'll get there when you get there, but you have to get through 90% of Iron Flame to get it. So,
Yep.
unless you're smarter than me.
Once Zayden has her on the floor, he notes that she's tiny. Like he's realizing it for the first time, and tells her to stop going for bigger moves that expose her. He guides her hands to show her where to strike. Kidneys, rib shot, the waist. These are all killing blows, vital blows, and so far Violet has been trying to avoid those. He further tells her that Dane is holding her back and defenseless women have never been his type. When the match is over, Zayden tells Dane to stop coddling her and to actually train her. Yes, thank God. That's what we've been saying. Later that evening, Dane gives Violet a massage and tells her he told Colonel Markham that he thinks Zayden wants to kill her. Dane also told Markham about Barlow and Oren. Markham agrees to still take Violet into the Scribe Project. Scribe Quadrant. Say that 10 times fast.
No.
Violet accuses Dane of going behind her back because he thinks she's not cutting it. Dane informs Violet that first years take out vendettas during threshing. Second and third years can't do anything. They can't step in. They can only watch. Dane doesn't want to lose Violet. He wants to protect her, but part of Violet knows that she's actually made it this far. What else can she do? He's giving her a way out, but really, she wants to stay.
That was a big turning point for Violet, I think,
Yes.
when she realizes that she could, like, she has been given a way out, right? She didn't want to be here, but then she actually made it across the parapet and she didn't die. And then she's like, holy crap, I'm here, I'm alive, I did it. And then she finds herself feeling more at home in the Riders Quadrant, even though she was fully prepared and trained for the Scribe Quadrant. And I think she would have been happy in the Scribe Quadrant. Like, what you don't know that you missed, like, you can't miss, right? That what you don't know. But this is one of those things where she found, like, a truer calling than the other thing. But Dane refuses to see that because, to his credit, he is trying to keep her alive. And
In his way.
he's being very overbearing. But go through the journey with Dane and it'll make sense. And you're gonna go down lows and then you're gonna come up highs. And
I mean, yeah, no, when I first read Fourth Wing and most of Iron Flame, I was pissed. I did not like Dane. I was like, No, he's holding her back. This is not what a true friend would do. I was pissed. It took a reread of both books, and it took watching a couple of Rebecca Yarros's interviews and stuff. But after reading Onyx Storm and then coming back, it's kind of like you see a different side of him and you start to understand him a little bit more. So I don't hate Dane now, but yeah, my first read, I was just, I don't.
well,
I still get frustrated.
I mean, I was you saw me go through that whole journey because I was yeah, I was right there and I was just like, I cannot believe it. But yeah, it does it all kind of comes together in Iron Flame and you sit there and you're like, ah, oh, damn.
But I mean, do you feel like, I mean, you've known me since, God, like my sophomore year of high school. Do you feel like he's overstepping here? Like, would you be this protective overstepping if it was us?
That's a hard question because one, we're not in like a life or death,
Well,
situation. At this point in the story, it's very easy to feel like he is overstepping and he's limiting. But when you get through Iron Flame, now looking at this, it's very easy to look at it and say he was doing the best he could with what he had. Like, so it's hard to be mad at him. I can understand it from his point of view, but it is hard because at some point you do have to let a person make their own decisions. But at the same point, it's somebody you care about and you want to protect them from everything. So I don't envy his position, that's for sure.
No, I don't. We are told by Dane that the Writer's Quadrant changes a person. So it kind of makes you wonder what happened to Dane in his first year to make him such a rule follower and codex obsessed. We do learn that Violet does tell Rhi that Dane was always a rule abiding and he's always liked order, and I think that just comes with the territory of who his dad is. But I feel like something must have happened during his first year to make him even more rigid.
Yeah.
Whereas on the flip side, Zayden's a wing leader who's, that's very top of
Yeah, he's already
their
been.
leadership thing, and he's like, he's within the codex, but he's not like,
But there's always
straight
people
laced.
like that, people who are like, the rules are there and we can get by on technicalities.
Yeah.
And then there's people who are like, no, the rule says what the rule says, and that's what the rule says. And technically, they're both right, unless you're outright breaking the rule.
Yeah.
See, I'm more of the type who skirts technicalities.
Should you be admitting this on the air?
If I can find a way to reinterpret a rule in my favor, I will. And they'll be like, it says this. And I'll be like, well, yeah, but technically it could also mean, because it doesn't actually say not to do this. Just saying.
Yeah.
I get it.
So other than Zayden totally wiping Violet's ass on the mat, do you think Violet was actually in any danger? Like, what part of that whole exchange made Dane think Zayden was going to kill her? Because Zayden clearly could have within seconds, but he didn't. He kept making Violet try over and over and over again.
I think, at this point right now, Dane is probably viewing Zayden as a predator toying with his meal, right? Like,
Yeah,
because
okay.
he's fully convinced that Zayden's gonna kill her at some point or try to. And
Yeah.
he's gonna do it at a point where Dane can't get into, I mean, this would be the perfect time to do it, right? And Dane's probably on the sidelines looking at it like he's got her pinned. He's going to kill her, but then he doesn't. And the anxiety that Dane is probably feeling at this moment, like, what is he waiting for? Is he toying with her? Is he messing with me? Is he like,
Yeah.
because Violet thinks that he's toying with her. And then she's like, why is he showing me ways to disarm and get out of this, kidney shot, rib shot kind of stuff. And it's like, are you messing? I mean, that's a great psychological attack. Like, let the person think they have a chance and then
Yeah.
be like, and now that you've learned that, snap. Like,
That is true.
you had
Is
a
it all a
chance.
big is it all a big game to Zayden?
I can see where you would assume that. I think, but by this point, I was already kind of at this point. I was like, you know what? There's something going on, and he's keeping her alive for some reason. I don't know why yet. But at this point, the only person or people who seem convinced that he's going to kill her are Dane and Violet, even though he personally hasn't done a single thing to do it. And he has had so many. I mean, he could have killed her out by the tree,
Yeah.
and nobody would have even known.
No. Like he could have snapped her neck and threw her in the river or
Or just
any other sort of things.
strangled her with the shadows and no, nothing. He wouldn't even have to touch her. And
Yeah.
that's the whole thing. He could kill her at any point. Now, I realize that they have to operate within the codex, right? But if he's already out there meeting with the marked ones, he's already breaking codex. So it's really not that far-fetched to say, oh, you shouldn't have been out here. Shadows, snap, thrown in the river.
Yeah.
What codex or no codex, if there are no witnesses, it doesn't matter.
Well, and he's also wing leader, so if he finds a weakness within his own wing, he's well within his rights to,
Yeah, so just the fact that he hasn't done it at this point, I was already like, I don't think he's going to do it. I don't know why, but I don't think he's going to do it. There's.
Well, and he has also even told her. Because she's keeping his secret about the Marked Ones meeting, he owes her a favor. I don't think someone that's going to kill you is going to be like, I owe you a favor.
Yeah.
But that's.
Yeah, so for the moment, he's on her side, sort of. He's at least not actively against her. So.
He's doing much more than Dane is.
I mean, that's true. They're supposed to be mortal enemies, and he's already done more to train her than Dane has, so. So as if that wasn't enough, all, the training and Zayden getting all up in her business and making her confused. The cadets get to move on to the next part of their training. And so chapter 10, we move to the gauntlet, which is basically American Ninja Warrior, but it can kill you. So,
And it will kill you.
and yes, the gauntlet is an obstacle course on the side of a cliff that guards the Vale. It zigzags back and forth. So American Ninja Warrior, but vertical up a cliff, which would be fun if there was something to catch you on the way down.
And if it was all padded, like American Ninja Warrior is.
Right, yeah. It's called the gauntlet because it guards the Vale. And the Vale is where the young dragons and the hatchlings and all of them are protected while they grow orally. Can't wait to do it. As she's trained with her brother and their dad, who happens to be also be a writer. Riddick and Tynan share words as Tynan is increasingly becoming a shit thanks to his friendship with Jack and Oren. Sawyer tells everyone that time doesn't mean anything on the gauntlet. The last cadet to walk presentation bonded just fine. Hand-to-hand challenges are on hold for 2.5 weeks as the first years train on the gauntlet. Tynan insinuates that Dane and Vi have been screwing around. Luca agrees. Ri steps in to set them straight. Daddy Eidos is General Sorengale's aide. So Lilith Sorengale, Violet's mom, for those who are not keeping track of everything. So Dane's dad is Violet's mom's aide. And they've been stationed together for as long as Dane and Violet have been alive, which is why they're best friends. Riddick also steps in and Tynan and Luca probably shut up because they're like, look, they've grown up together. They aren't screwing around. They're literally friends from childhood. Sawyer demonstrates the gauntlet, having gone through it the year before. Everyone else follows after. Tynan gets stuck and has to use a rope to get back down from the course. Just like the parapet, Violet finds herself reciting notes to calm herself down as she goes through. And if you guys ever find the time, you should look up some of the stuff that people put on social media for this, like the way that they've mapped out like 3D models and stuff, because it kind of gives you an idea of how the course looks. And it's pretty fun. And then you also look at it and go, they're like trying to kill these kids. Like,
Actively trying to kill them in this quadrant.
I know for sure I wouldn't have made it through this thing. While on the gauntlet, Violet is just ahead of Orly, and a dragon flies by overhead, startling them. Orly slips and falls while on the rotating logs, and it happens so fast that she's unable to grab the rope and she falls to her death. Violet is helpless and she can only watch. The first trial of the gauntlet has already taken out many of the cadets once everyone is done. Vi was able to make it to the chimney section of the course, but she's too short to span the distance. After the chimney section, the final section is the ramp that simulates running up the dragon's leg to get to your seat. So she's going to have to figure something out. And not completing the gauntlet is not an option. You either complete it or you die. Again, what the hell? Violet volunteers to take Orly's stuff to the burn pit as she was the last one to see her, and declining Dane's offer to go with her. At the edge of the turret, Violet sees shadows of three dragons approach from the west and descend. She seriously contemplates Dane's request to hide out in the scribe quadrant. If someone who practiced their whole life for the gauntlet died, their first time actually on it, how is she going to make it? As she heads back, the door to the tunnel that leads to the gauntlet opens. Violet presses against the wall, hiding herself in the shadows, and waits as Zayden, Bodhi, and Garrick pass by. And of course, she's hiding in the shadows. Zayden's already told her that he commands the shadows. So, but to be fair, I would assume that means that Garrick and Bodhi don't know that she's there. And, just because Zayden's not ready to kill her doesn't mean the other two aren't. So,
True.
as they discuss what more they can do, Violet feels that prickling in her scalp again. And of course, Zayden knows that she's there. Zayden sends Bodhi and Garrick ahead and is surprised when Violet doesn't question him on where he's been. She retorts, saying that she doesn't care, and with a head tilt to the side, as if he's studying her or reading her, he says, "You really don't, do you?" So this is where the intrigue begins, maybe. He's like, "I'm accustomed to people caring, and you literally don't give a shit." Yes. He questions her about being out past curfew, and she tells him she's debating running away. And he tells her he debates the same thing. She wants to know if he's going to kill her or what. And he's basically like, or what? Violet notices the subtle things, like Jaden, shit. Like Zayden's jaw ticking when he sees the scrape on her cheek. When he grabs her, his hold is firm, but light. And she even feels a caress along the side of her wounded cheek, even though he doesn't touch her there. He admits he knows everything that goes on here. He wields shadows, but yeah.
Oh yeah, you're starting to
That
connect
was
some things.
a definite thing. Perfect excuse for him, but read Iron Flame, you'll get it. Proving his wing leader abilities, he gives her more advice. Focus on things that can kill you so you can find ways not to die. What makes her a writer is what she does after people do die. He further surprises her, telling her that she is the scale that he currently judges himself against every night. Every day he lets her live, he gets to convince himself that there's still a part of him that's decent. And before he goes, he has a final bit of advice in regards to the gauntlet. The right way isn't the only way. Figure it out.
Again, even when he's being threatening, he's still helping.
Right, he's actually kind of a nice guy. In a very
And
threatening, but I like that she's at this point. She's like, "Are you just gonna do? Are you going to kill me? Because I would really like to know." And he's like, "You can just keep wondering about that."
that's some shit you would say.
I know
Because you
there
are a
is,
shit.
you know what? There is so much with their interaction though. Now, when you reread this, and you're just like, "Ah." Oh. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
He's basically outing himself, and yeah.
He is. He is.
It made me really sad that Aurelie died on this, and this was just their trial run to
Yeah.
get accustomed to the course. It wasn't even one of the actual, like,
Timed
timed
events or
events.
anything.
She didn't even make it past the training thing. And she had
Yeah.
been doing this since she was like 5 or 6 or something. Like,
Yeah. I feel like Rebecca does this on purpose. She gives us like this little bit of backstory, this cute like little thing, with Dylan in the first chapter. He has this ring, he wants to propose. What happens? He falls off the fucking parapet. And now Aurelie, she's so excited for Gauntlet. Her brother enjoyed it somehow. Her father's trained both of them all their lives on it, and she was just like, "Yes, let's do it." And what happens? She's running on those spinning logs, like going from one to the next, and a dragon flies by, roars, startles her, and down she goes. And that's it.
yeah, and that is a
No second
trend.
chances.
We will see that continue into Iron Flame.
Yeah.
That's so messed up.
Violet says that they have to complete the gauntlet or fall to your death. And I want to know, so they are gonna practice on this course for 2.5 weeks, and then they're gonna have like the final timed event before presentation. What happens if you can't make it up the gauntlet? Do they expect you to like throw yourself off and die? Because I don't see people doing that.
I imagine the staying on any part of the gauntlet for any length of time is just going to be really uncomfortable. and eventually your arms or your legs would give out and you'd fall anyway. Not like there's enough space up there to like lay down and be like, this is where I live now. You know what I mean? It's like you're stuck somewhere and the expectation is you
You
keep
do it or.
going or you're gonna just become so exhausted that, or you're gonna attempt to climb back down and then fall off, or you know, because exhaustion will eventually overtake you. So
Yeah.
at least that's, you know, kind of how I envision.
Yeah, okay. That makes more sense.
You're not going to come back 2 days later and see a rider still up there because I just don't think there's
Just
anywhere.
hiding out.
I just don't think there's anywhere for them to really like chill for a long period of time without just rolling off in their sleep or, you know, cramping and falling, just something like,
Yeah. Pezgaiath seems like a death factory, especially the Riders Quadrant. Like we talked about that, you know, with Parapet, like there's no net or anything to catch them. And I think you even mentioned like you can weed out the weak without so much unnecessary death. And here's this other course that they have to go through, and it's either completed or die. I would think that they would want as many able-bodied people to be in their army. And so I think like nets or water or something to catch them would make more sense. And then like, oh, you failed. You can either restart, you know, in the next year or off to the infantry you go.
Yeah, basically, like you fell off of the gauntlet, so you died, quote unquote, and you can try again next year, or you can go to one of the other quadrants. There are no retries today here. Like, you get one chance. You fail, and that's it. But it does. It seems so unnecessary. They lose by the time they get through all this, they lose like 50% of their cadets. Like, that's not a efficient way of utilizing your most important asset of, you know, of people to fight this, you know, war that they have going on. So you're like, yeah, we're weeding out the weak. But we're also like shortening our bodies by a considerable amount. It seems like, you know, I wouldn't say it's just poor planning. It seems very deliberate that they're doing this. And yeah, I would be curious to know whether it's the humans who came up with this, or is it the Empyrean who's like, look, we're gonna do the bonding thing, but there's some rules, like
Here are our
our
expectations. You need
expectations.
to.
If either you weed them out or we will be torching a lot of people at the end versus the like handful or, you know, who knows? I would really like to know though who came up with the, because it's just so unnecessary.
It is. All right. Time out. All right. Chapter 11. So it seems that the big ball hanging thing is Tynan's downfall, whereas the chimney continues to taunt Violet. Presentation is the next day, and Violet still doesn't know what to do. It's not like she can poison the course. No, could you imagine? She just poisons everybody. Nobody can do the gauntlet.
I mean,
If she runs to the scribes, it has to be that night. But if she goes, if she hides, she'll never know if she was good enough and doesn't know if she could live with herself. Thank Dune she doesn't run, because then we really wouldn't have had a story. Otherwise, yeah, we wouldn't have gotten gauntlet and presentation. Some of the second and third years wish them luck. While the squads file out near the gauntlet, Dane keeps pleading over and over with Violet to change her mind, to run to the scribes. He tells her he doesn't know if he can watch, as in watch her fail the gauntlet and die. Way to support your BFF. Violet finally snaps and tells him to close his eyes. An hour later, Violet is racing up the gauntlet. She's at the chimney, her nemesis. She runs back and grabs a rope and positions it. She uses it to help her climb the chimney. And someone overhead snaps, "Can she do that?" Bitch, she just did. Her last hurdle is the ramp, the other thing that she has not been able to train on for the past 2.5 weeks. Violet unsheathes her largest dagger she brought with her from home. She runs up the ramp, and just as gravity starts to take her, She slams the dagger into the ramp, using the momentum, and hauls herself up. Once up there, she turns back, leans over, and grabs her dagger. She faces her friends, and she's embraced by Rhiannon and Riddick. Amber Mavis, Dane's special friend from his first year, is shouting, "She can't do that!" and accuses Violet of cheating. Amber claims that Violet used foreign materials twice, and it's not allowed to Zayden. Garrick gets in between Amber and Zayden, not liking that she's accusing someone in his section, a cheater, and that Zayden will handle anyone of rule-breaking in his wing. Again, that word, handle. Zayden turns to Violet and she defends herself. She expects the 30-second penalty for using the rope on the chimney, then quoting the codex, basically saying anything a writer brings with them across the parapet is considered to be part of their person. Her dagger was brought with her, not one on the mat. Zayden's eyes flare and a hint of a smirk on his mouth. Violet finishes telling him, "The right way isn't the only way." And Amber is pissed. She doesn't like that Violet is quoting the Codex to her because she, like Dane, is obsessed with the Codex. She tells Violet that she thinks like a scribe. And she storms off. Zayden tells Violet she's leaking and to take care of it. So Rhiannon and Bi step aside and help bandage her up. And good news, everyone in Violet's squad makes it.
You know, as I was just saying about the rules and the technicalities, like sometimes you got to know exactly where the rules end and the technicalities can begin, because then you can use that to your advantage. And I feel like this is like the moment where Zayden is looking at Violet and he's like,
"Hot damn,
I want her." Like, no longer, he's no longer like, "I want to kill her." He's like, I want to have her. Because he put a challenge to her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she rose to that challenge.
Yeah, she did. Down at the last minute, too. And she didn't know if any of this was going to work. She didn't get a chance to try, you know, using the rope in the chimney. She didn't get to try the ramp at any point. I would not have thought to use a dagger to haul myself up the ramp.
And you know that I would even say that actually really worked to her advantage, because guaranteed if she had tried either of these things during the training, somebody would have said, "Oh no, you can't do that."
That's true.
And then during the final one, she would have been out of luck. But because she used it at the very end, there was no chance of a redo because this was the test.
Mm-hmm.
And she hadn't done it before. And she said, "I'll take the penalty for the rope."
Mm-hmm.
And the whole dagger thing, Codex, you can't argue it. But I think it only worked because she didn't show anybody. I mean, obviously, she didn't have that idea beforehand.
Yeah.
But if she had tried that on one of the trial runs, I think they would have shut it down. And then she would have been stuck.
I also think adrenaline, too. The day of, you know, it's this timed event. You either make it or you die. She doesn't know if it's going to work. So she has that adrenaline rush behind her. It's a do or die situation. And you either fail and die, or you use that adrenaline to boost you and to get what you need.
I mean, she had one shot.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if she had tried the dagger and had missed and not gotten it in all the way, she slid back down the ramp, she would have slid right off the gauntlet. Like,
yeah.
And then the book's over.
I think I can speak for all of us when I say especially my first read, my very, very first read of Fourth Wing, I was so annoyed and pissed with Dane at this point. Your best friend is about to run the gauntlet for presentation. And instead of boosting your best friend up, you're sitting there going, "Please, please, please let me sneak you to the scribe quadrant right now." I feel like if you are their best friend, you air your concerns at first, yes, but then you support your friend. And especially as a squad leader, you should be giving them pointers and help them train. And I know we've already discussed this, but you know, Zayden challenged her more, got her thinking. Whereas Dane was only putting the fear of this into her and trying to give her a safer, a coward's way out.
Yeah. I mean,
Damn it, Dane.
it's still hard to be mad at him because he's still looking at her and envisioning the frail girl that he knew from before. Scribe Violet would never attempted to do this, right? Although it does say that when they were growing up, they would climb trees and stuff together, so you know, you don't climb trees because you're afraid of them. So
No.
she must have had some sort of adventure spirit. But again, how many of his friends did he lose during the gauntlet himself personally? You know, I
Yeah.
mean, we don't know that information. And if he's looking at it and thinking he's going to lose another friend, particularly a friend that he didn't think was even going to be there, that's a lot for him to handle. I mean,
Yeah.
so I get it on the one hand, but on the other hand, once you realize, you know, she's here, she's going for it, then yeah, you need to be like, look, I don't agree with the way that you're doing this because I still think it's the wrong decision. But if you are intent on staying here, then fine. We're going to train. We're going to do things to get you prepared for this so that you at least have a fighting chance.
Yes.
Instead of whining about it and being like, you need to leave, you need to leave. Like, the first couple of days, no problem. But she said, like,
Yeah.
contingencies, man.
But and also for being such a rule follower and codex stickler, his wing leader told him, commanded him, stop coddling her and train her. And he hasn't. He's basically going against a direct order.
Yeah.
Come on, Dane. Come on, don't let us down.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I get it, but I did enjoy the fact that she used Zayden's words against him.
Yeah.
And I think that Zayden liked that she used his words against him.
Yeah.
And I think he was not anticipating enjoying that so much. He's like, hot damn, she actually listened and she's got a mouth on her. All right.
Yeah. Surprise, surprise.
Chapter 12. Vi's squad placed 11 out of 36 squads for presentation. And presentation is a piss-inducing parade of cadets before the dragons that are willing to bond this year. The fastest up the gauntlet was Liam Mary, and Violet is just happy that she didn't come in last.
Same girl.
Right? I mean, you're just happy you can get up there, right? And
Yep.
the dragons average about 25 feet tall, which is about the height of a two-story house in the US. But you also have to remember that height is also with width, like, so. It's not like they're tall and spindly dragons. For every foot of height, you've got to add
Muscle
muscle and
width.
diameter around. So they line up single file, spaced about 7 feet apart, so that if one of them gets scorched, they don't all get scorched. They are not to approach the dragons. They don't make eye contact with the dragons. But if a dragon decides to show off their tails or something, they can look. But no eye contact. Luca asks if there is really a feather tail in the lineup, as she overheard there was, and Garrick is just annoyed with her. He tells them all to relax. Feather tails don't bond. It's probably just there because it's curious. They are advised to talk to each other during their walk. It helps the dragons get a sense of who you are and how well you get along with everyone else. Tynan, who is ahead of Violet, continues to be an ass. Violet converses with Rhi, who is behind her, asking her about her family, if she's hoping for a nephew or a niece. Rhi asks Vi, why she didn't tell her about her plan on the gauntlet. She would have helped her. Vi didn't want to implicate her in case she failed. Rhee has a real shot at a career here. They end up promising each other that if they need help and if it's something that they can give, they will ask for it. At the end of the dragon lineup is a small golden dragon, the Feathertail. Both Tynan and Luca are immediately assholes about the Feathertail, which is... Why would you do this in front of the dragons? They tell Vi that she should bond with the Feathertail since they're both small and freakishly weak. This is coming from a guy who couldn't get across the buoy balls. Sawyer lunges for Tynan and grabs his collar. Trina steps in, putting a hand on Sawyer, reminding him not to make a mistake in front of the dragons. Tynan, ever the asshole, says that someone should kill the Feathertail before it bonds. It's just going to get its rider killed. And yeah, amazing that he wasn't torched on the spot for this, for insulting the dragons. Like,
right. I was so surprised. They're all, him especially, but him and Luca were just going on and on about the Feathertail. They're disrespecting the Feathertail, one of their own, and not one dragon stepped forward and was like, you're gone.
Right. Yeah. Pryor suggests that they go, but they can stay if they want to. Tynan shoves past him, telling him to make up his mind for once in his life. Luca continues to insult the dragons on their way back. Like, dumb freaking, like, what the hell? Violet tries to defuse the situation by saying it could be worse. They could be walking past wyverns. Rhee and Vi share wyvern and venom stories from their youth. Violet tells of the time that she thought her mom was a venom because of her bloodshot eyes, and her mom took her fable book from her for a month. Luca chalks it up to border village nonsense. Rhee tells Pryor to pick up the pace. He asks if they should take their time, then asks that they could speed up if they want. A red dragon steps forward and roasts him. Sawyer shouts at them to keep walking. Luca complains about the smell of Pryor. Two green dragons step out of line and approach Violet, sniffing her bleeding hand and her armor. Violet tells them that she cut her hand climbing the course, and then realizes that they smell tyne on her and explains that her sister used tyne's shedded scales to make her vest. She goes on to tell them only Mira and Tynan know about it, and it saved her life more than once. They retreat back into line. Rhee approaches her to make sure she's all right. Violet confides in her that she has dragon scale armor from her sister, and they smelled tyne on her. They resume walking, Riddick admitting he nearly shit himself when the dragons approached Violet. Luca remarks that she thought they were going to eat her and she wouldn't have blamed them. She is the weakest link after Pryor. On and on she goes until Vi feels heat singeing her back. Riddick confirms that Luca has been taken out. Their squad is down to 6 first years.
Again. So Luca and Pryor, they're toast. But why is Tynan still walking, still living, when he was just going on and on about the Feathertail? And when you come to learn later what the Feathertails are, you would think that the dragons would have been more pissed at the disrespect.
At first, I was surprised that Pryor was taken out. But then I thought, no, he was showing weakness in front of the dragons because he couldn't make a damn decision. And no dragon is going to want to bond. This is the thing that I don't quite understand, is what makes the dragons choose between letting them and not bonding and deciding to toast them right on the spot. So unless the dragon looked at Pryor and said, if this guy manages to bond with a dragon at some point, it's going to get that dragon killed.
I would think so.
So he has to be eliminated because he is just a liability to any dragon if he makes it past this stage, right?
But so again, they could have also let him live and none of the dragons would have bonded him. And then he would have had to, you know, continue his year like Sawyer did the previous year, and then the following year he either could have tried again in the writer's quadrant or he could have joined another quadrant.
Right. As I'm, like, what was the difference between, like, Sawyer clearly did this, but he didn't bond because apparently he wasn't found to be worthy of a bond, but he wasn't so unworthy that he got toasted.
I think just that whole indecisiveness was just too much for the dragons because they're gonna see battle. They're deployed right after graduation to man all the borders and everything, and your indecisiveness is going to cost the lives of fellow writers, fellow civilians and stuff. And
I mean, I could, yeah, if in some world Pryor did make it all the way out there, I could see him second guessing, and on the back of a dragon, that's life or death between a comrade or you, and you know.
I think letting him live and him going into like infantry or the healer's quadrant, and he's still second guessing himself on that, the lives are still going to be at stake.
Yeah, that's just a huge risk.
Even in the scribe quadrant, where you're not seeing action unless you're out on the field, questioning whether you should notate something or not. Yeah, like in any quadrant, that is just going to be such a huge liability.
Yeah. So he was the first one, and then I was honestly, I was hoping that they were going to take Luca out
Oh, yeah.
because
She was so annoying.
she was something else. I mean,
Yeah.
one she was one of the two saying that the Feathertail should just be killed, and then suggesting, and it almost felt like she was trying to sabotage Violet's reputation in front of the dragons in the hopes that they would take her out, like by
Yes.
saying, oh yeah, like this one here, she's also weak, so she should be bonded with the weak dragon because, you know, we're talking about weeding out the weak. We don't need the weak, and she's so weak. And
I think that hurt Luca in the end. Her continually trying to out a fellow cadet.
it was sabotage, and the
Yeah.
dragons.
And you don't do that when you're out riding together or, defending an outpost together, whatever. Again, it's another liability. But I also think it helped Violet by talking about like the wyvern and the Venon as stories and stuff with Rhi. And then also her having the dragon scale armor from Mira. So even though she's the weakest, and maybe some of the dragons were looking at Violet, she's shorter, she's smaller and everything, but she has knowledge that the others don't, whether she knows it or not. Maybe they're just bedtime stories, but she knows about these things, and she has this dragon scale armor from her sister. She's worth something.
She's also she's also somebody that values the camaraderie of her squad mates, you know, even
Yeah.
though they don't know each other all that well yet. I think the dragons look at that, and they look at how well you interact with the people that you are eventually going to be, you know, entrusting your life to. And
Yeah, we see her constantly like trying to defuse the situation with Tynan and Luca. She's jumping to the defense of the Feathertail, right away. There's no hesitation. And yeah, she's just showing the strength of her character versus Tynan and Luca. But still, why didn't they take Tynan out? That just.
but see, there's a lot of people, as you get through the story later, where you say, how the hell did that one bond with a dragon? Because they are a sadistic, like, piece of work.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the commanding people, and some of the, I mean, Barlow, and a lot of these where you think that they would be such a huge liability. So it's who knows what the criteria is for how the dragons judge you, 'cause some of those
Yeah.
people they let through, and you're like, huh? Maybe they looked at it and they saw that Tynan is not so much of a rebellious leader as much as he is a follower, and Luca was more of an instigator. Like,
Yeah,
if she
that's true.
wasn't there, maybe Tynan wouldn't have said anything. You know what I mean? How there's always that kid who's like, the one starts mouthing off, and there's the other one who's like, "Oh yeah, ha ha ha." But when that other one's not there, they're very quiet and usually actually very like pleasant to be
Mellow.
around.
Yeah.
Falling in with the wrong crowd, you know?
True. Maybe they decided to leave Tynan and were discussing within their own dragon, community, like, watch out for this one. Nobody bond this one, but he's not worth toasting.
Yeah, no, let's see
It
what
could.
happens, how it goes, 'cause
Yeah. Speaking of the armor, I feel like why don't more dragon riders have this dragon-scaled armor? Since we learned that the dragons shed their scales, Mira had mentioned to her sister that she was going to speak to the higher-ups to see about making more of this armor for the riders. And
yeah.
nothing ever comes through with that.
Which is really surprising, because you would think they would look at that and say, all of our riders can have impenetrable armor,
And it would help with against Dragonfire.
and it would help again. I mean,
I mean, I know
not
that they're not like blasting each other, but there is war games and stuff that the cadets have to go through and
yeah, but I think the Dragonfire is so big that it envelops your whole body, so
it
like
would still
your
help.
torso would be fine, but everything else would be gone.
I mean, they could have done it like Hiccup style. He made armor and helmets with like the
I
dragon
guess
scales
that's
and stuff.
true. Yeah, it seems, I mean.
Unless it's just maneuverability because they do have to run up
That
their
could be. I
dragon's
mean,
legs.
linking it together and running, I don't know. But they could at least have a chest
At least
plate.
the,
I mean,
yeah.
it's helped Violet with daggers and all kinds of stuff so far. Like,
Exactly. They could have made like little what are they? The
yeah, the
cuff.
bracers. I mean, yeah, like
Yeah.
chest
Like
gear,
you tie it on,
bracers
but
for the legs, you know. Yeah, they could have done.
it would have helped so much with like the hand-to-hand combat, for those that are out on the borders and stuff.
There had to be an active choice where they looked at it and said, yeah, we're not going to do that. We need
I mean, I can also understand if there's not enough wielders who can size things down and make things bigger. That might not be a common signet.
That's true. If it's like one person.
But you think still over, it's what, 600 years that they've had dragon riders and stuff, they would have figured something out.
And it's not like the dragon scales are gonna like go bad. They could have been collecting them for, yeah, like years upon years, and been like, every chance we get, we'll just make them and shrink them, and or collect them and shrink them and collect them and shrink them and have a storehouse of it. And
Yeah.
they just sit there until, yeah, it's kind of a head scratcher. Like, it seems like something that would be so obvious, and you would be like, yes, this will help protect our riders and save lives. And they're like, well, save lives? That's not what we're in the business of doing.
That makes writers weak.
Screw them.
Dear Lord. Yeah.
Hey.
Plot armor.
Yeah. But, yeah, a little irritating. But, you know, who knows why the higher ups do what the higher ups do?
That is true.
Ahem, current climate. What? All right. As we wrap up today's episode on our fourth wing, I almost said the wrong book. Just a reminder that next Thursday, we will be going through chapters 13 through 18 of Fourth Wing, getting deeper into the story, and it's a nonstop ride. So definitely read to at least 18 and farther if you can, because you're just going to learn stuff along the way. On Tuesday, we will be going through chapters 8 through 14 of Crown of Midnight on the Throne of Glass series. And if you had caught the episode from a couple days ago, you know that things are already off to a running start with that one. All of our characters are just having their own little mini crises everywhere. So, if you have thoughts, theories, or ideas, let us know in the comments. You can send us an email directly to hello@bookscatsandchaos.com. You can comment on the episode entries on our website, you can leave a comment on the YouTube channel, or you can interact on any of our social medias. We can be reached in multiple ways. And thank you so much for listening, joining us again this week. And as we continue to just go through as much of this as we can, since we've got multiple books now that we're doing and trying to bring you guys as much listening entertainment as possible.
And if you like what you hear so far, please share with your friends and family. The more the merrier. As we head out, please don't forget to give some love and support to our friends over at K911 Rescue, K911 R-E-S-Q. Visit them on their website and on social media, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. They try to help as many, you know, handicapped and senior animals as possible. They are always looking for foster parents and volunteers, and donations are always, always needed. So please, again, check them out. You can also check out the Pasadena Humane Society. They have been working around the clock, rescuing, treating, and trying to reunite animals from the LA fires. So we will drop both their links in our show notes, and I try to share as much as I can on our stories, you know, like on Instagram, so you can follow them there as well.
Yep.
All right, guys. Happy reading, and we will see you again next week, cadets.
See you next time.